Open your Bibles with me tonight, please, to the book of Hebrews in the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 11. How many here tonight are age 19 and under? Would you stand to your feet, please? If you're 19 or under, would you stand? I just want to see. Wow! Are we blessed, folks? Is this incredible? Thank God. Thank you. Now, wait. Remain standing for a second. I want to talk just to you for just a second, all right? I want everybody to get the message tonight, but I especially want all of you to really pay close attention to the message tonight. It'll really help you in your life. If you will do that, would you nod your heads at me all over the auditorium, please? Everybody nod your head. You're going to pay close attention? Good. All right. Thank you. You may be seated. Hebrews chapter 11. World War II produced some incredible heroes. One such man was a man by the name of Butch O'Hare. Every time you hear the name O'Hare Airport in Chicago, it is paying tribute to that man. Each time I have flown through the terminal, landed and been in the terminal there at O'Hare Airport and seen the nice monuments that they have, remembering the story that I'm about to share with you, I remember what a great American hero he was. Butch O'Hare was a fighter pilot assigned to an aircraft carrier in the South Pacific. One day, his entire squadron was sent on a mission. After he was airborne, he looked at his fuel gauge and realized someone had forgotten to top off his fuel tank. He would not have enough fuel to complete his mission and get back to his ship. His flight leader told him to return to the aircraft carrier. Reluctantly, he dropped out of formation, followed orders, and headed back to the fleet. As he was returning to the mothership, he saw something that sent chills all over him and turned his blood cold. A squadron of Japanese Zeros were speeding their way toward the American fleet. The American fighters were gone on a sortie, and the fleet was all but defenseless against all these Japanese Zeros. He could not reach his squadron and bring them back in time to save the fleet of ships. Nor could he warn the fleet of the approaching danger. There was only one thing to do. He must somehow divert that entire squadron single-handedly from the fleet of ships. Would you look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23? This is the faith chapter, and this is the story of the great man of God by the name of Moses. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Read verse 25 out loud with me, would you please, all together? Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were drowned. The Bible is full of stories of people who made both wise and foolish choices. In the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, as the first man and the first woman, by the way, they were the first man and the first woman, And they were given by God the first key choice. They chose unwisely. They plunged themselves and the entire human race into sin. A few generations later, Noah and his family made one choice, and every other person alive made another choice. Theirs was one of the most unpopular choices in the history of the entire world. That one family was the only ones who chose to do right. But they lived to tell it, and everyone else on the earth drowned in the flood. When Abraham and Lot's servants squabbled, Abraham gave Lot his choice. And Lot chose. He looked, and man, it looked good. He saw the well-watered fields headed over in the direction of the vile city of Sodom, and he chose that direction. And the destruction of Lot's children in Sodom showed that Lot made the wrong choice. And the text that I just read to you tells an unusual choice that Moses made. Moses chose to suffer affliction with the people of God. He chose to be mistreated with the Israelites rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He recognized, listen to me, the pleasures of sin are real, but they're always temporary. They're always just for a season of time. And he recognized wisely that it would be much better for him to choose the reproach of Christ. Isn't that interesting? To choose to be associated with Christ, and this is in the Old Testament, but it still says it, or it's referring to a time in the Old Testament, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Did you notice that? Do you know what kind of treasures were in Egypt? There was gold, there was silver. He had been raised by Pharaoh's daughter in Pharaoh's palace. He could have had anything he ever wanted, ever dreamed of. But he said, you know what? I'll turn my back on all of that and I'll choose the reproach. Did you know sometimes there's a reproach in serving God? Did you know some people will laugh at you if you serve God? Did you know some people will make fun of you if you serve God? Did you know some people will say you're crazy if you serve God? And they'll say, man, you could have popularity, you could have fame, you could have prestige, you can have riches. Why don't you choose that? And they'll think you're crazy. But you're not crazy to choose that which is permanent and eternal over that which is temporary, transitory, and will pass away. You're never crazy to do that. I was riding down the road some time back listening to the radio. And there was a preacher preaching, and he made one of the most phenomenal statements I have ever heard in my life. It so impressed me that I pulled out a 3x5 card right quick, and I wrote that statement down, and it is really the first point from my message tonight, and I want you to really get it. Listen to it very carefully. Life is not made by the dreams you dream. Life is made by the choices you make. Let me say it again. Life is not made by the dreams that you dream. Life is made by the choices you make. Now, I want to promise you something. Everybody here tonight, if you're enjoying life at all, is dreaming some dreams. Most people dream some dreams. They dream. Most young people dream of a stable, secure, successful, prosperous life. They dream of having the knowledge they need. They dream of being happy. Is there anybody gets up in the morning and says, I want to be as unhappy as I can today? I don't think so. They dream of living with a mate for whom they care and who cares for them in return. They dream of living to a good old age. They may dream of being remembered after they are gone. But hear me carefully. Dreams are not the stuff that life is made up of. Choices are the main frame on which life is built. Just like the main supports for this building you cannot see. The main supports for this building are underneath these walls. And the main support for those walls you cannot see. They are behind that sheetrock. And can I tell you something? Lots of times people don't see the choices you make, but those choices really determine the shape and the support and the future of your whole life. It's not the surface stuff. It is the choices you make. The greatest choice of all is the choice to trust Christ as Savior. And that's a choice you must make, and no one else can make it for you. But that's not all. That's just the beginning. You choose whether or not you will learn. And you choose what you will learn. Proverbs 22:1 says, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. You choose whether or not you will have a good name or a bad name. In fact, a good question for you to ask yourself right now is, what do people think of when they think of my name? When they hear my name, do they think of someone who obviously loves God, who has a smile on his or her face, somebody who's faithful to God, who is honoring parents, somebody who is honoring the authorities that God has placed over their life? What do people think of when they think of your name? You choose to get knowledge and understanding. Proverbs 16:16 says, understanding is rather to be chosen than silver. If I had a pile of silver and gold right here, right now, and I said, you can have that, or over on this side, you can have wisdom and understanding and knowledge, would you choose the silver and gold, or would you choose the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding? If you understand enough, you would very quickly say, I'll take this over this in a flash. How do you choose? You choose by the books you read, by the things you watch, and by the people with whom you associate yourself. You choose your career. You choose your ministries. You choose your place of work. You choose college or no college or which college. You choose, everybody chooses the crowd they run with. You choose the person that you're going to marry. You choose the church that you become a part of. In fact, that's very important. I'm so glad my parents chose, listen to me, parents, to take me, not send me, to a Bible-believing church that preached salvation and separation and soul winning and service. You choose where you're going to sit. More than that, you choose what attention you're going to pay each time you come and what impact the messages are going to make on your life. Now get this next statement. 10 years from tonight, you are not going to be where you dream you're going to be. 10 years from tonight, you are going to be where your choices take you. You see, you could stand back here and you could look forward and you could say, that's where I dream of being. Hey, look at that. Look at that. That looks wonderful. That looks delightful. That's where I dream of being. That's not where you're going. Unless You make the choices that will take you there. You don't go where you dream you will go. You dream where your you go where your choices take you. I've seen many, many young people over these years who dream, man, that's where I'm going. That's it. But they don't get there. They wind up shipwrecked along the way. You know why? Because they made choices that detoured them a totally different direction than they ever really wanted to go. And they thought at the time, you know, I'm dreaming, Achander, but I'm telling you, boy, this looks so good right now. I just got to have it. And as soon as they made that choice, it detoured their life off and they went downhill from then on. Life is not made up of the dreams that you dream. It is made up of the choices that you make. Somebody took the word sin, S-I-N, and said sin is Satan's invitation to nowhere. When you see Moses standing before Pharaoh and saying, God says, let my people go. When you see him later leading the children of Israel out of Egypt and across the Red Sea. When you see him on Mount Sinai, there to behold the presence of God like few men have ever beheld the presence of God and to receive the Ten Commandments from the hand of God himself. When you see Moses in the New Testament with Jesus and those two others on the Mount of Transfiguration, when you see all of that, it all goes back to one day. We don't even really know. I don't guess which day it was. That Moses decided, he weighed his options. He said, I can be a prince of Egypt. I can be one of the most well-known men in the world. I can be someone who has everything he wants. I can have my choice of which ladies I want. I can have my choice of what I want to do every day. I can have my choice of all the riches in this world. Or I can be a servant of God. And I will choose this. He chose to go with God's people. And when you see the outcome, when you see a man holding a rod up in the Red Sea parts, when you see a man standing on Mount Sinai, when you see a man standing on the Mount of Transfiguration, you are seeing a man who made a key wise choice. The second thing I want to say to you tonight is your choices matter a lot because of the brevity of life. Your choices matter because life is not really very long. James 4:14. What know ye not that your life is but a vapor? I was standing outside in the last couple of days. It was damp and chilly, and I went like this. And when I did, I saw vapor form, and I watched it. And about 2 seconds later, it was gone. Your life is but a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanishes away. And you say, oh man, I'm young. I got my whole life ahead of me. Your life, the Bible says, is here today and gone tomorrow. Ecclesiastes 12:1, that's why it says, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh. When thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And when it uses the word evil there, it's not talking about sinful. It's talking about uncomfortable and distressful days. It's when you get older and your arthritis hurts and your lumbago hurts and your eyes don't work right and your legs don't work right. We were going through the airport a while ago and they've got these long moving walkways to speed up the process, you know. Joshua takes the moving walkway. I went around it and I beat him to the other side. And I stood there and looked at him and I said, When's the young fella going to get here anyway? Huh? Took you a while to get here. I did it twice, and on the third time, he ran and beat me to the other end. We had a great time, and we were laughing, having a good time together. The truth is this. I'm not running like I used to. I'm not moving as fast. I'm coming out on top now. It's happening, and I can't stop it. Can I tell you something? You can't stop it either. Somebody put it like this. They said, the wood of the cradle and the wood of the coffin almost rub up against each other. Life is short. I remember, parents, it's very important what you put on the wall in your homes. On the wall in the home. In fact, I can still remember right where it was. There was this room we'd walk through. Ray Jean, I don't remember where. You remember that room used to go through to the kitchen in the old house? And right there on that wall on the left, the door opened like this. And right there on that wall, right there, was this little thing they probably bought for 50 cents. It was a little rectangular blue sign, and it had a little gold raised lettering on it. And here's what it said. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. You've only got one life. You won't get another one. It will soon be over, much sooner than you ever dreamed. And only what is done for Christ will last. Dr. Jack Howells had been picked up at the airport by a young preacher. They were riding along toward wherever he was going to preach at the time. And Dr. Howells looked at the younger preacher and said, do you plan to stay where you're at, Steve? And Steve looked back and said, I don't know, Dr. Howells. And Dr. Howells looked over at him as he drove along and he said, Brother Steve, just like that, you'll be my age. And I want you to be able to look back and feel fulfilled. And the only way you can do it is to make sure you always do the will of God. I'm 56 years of age. I'm not perfect. I'm a long ways from it. Y'all know that. But I want to tell you something. I've followed, generally speaking, I've followed God's will for my life. And I want to tell you, I can look back now and say, boy, I'm glad I did. Don't waste your life, young people. Just like that, you're going to be 30. And just like that, you're going to be 40. And just like that, you're going to be 50. And just like that, you're going to be 60. We've got a wonderful, sweet lady over here, 90 years of age. And she'll tell you, if you ask her, it doesn't seem like very long since you were a little girl. Am I right, Helen French? She's nodding her head. She's saying, you're right. I remember when I celebrated my 39th birthday. July the 10th, 1990. Guess where at? The doctor's office. I'd been riding a John Deere lawn tractor. They're telling the truth when they say nothing rides like a deer, I promise. Because I tried to take that up too steep a hill, and when I did, I got confused. I popped the clutch out. Should have been pushing it in, popped it out. And instead of it staying down, that lawn tractor did this number. Woo! Right over back on top of me. I was in my yard at my house. Some of you have been out there and seen it. And with this leg, I pushed the whole tractor off of me that way. But I put so much torque on that little tibia bone right there that it broke it. And I wasn't going to the doctor. What's a man need to go to the doctor for? Amen, guys? That's you know, you don't do that. But they finally said, you're going to have to go. And I walked in there and I looked at the x-ray technician. And I said, listen, I don't really want to see the doctor. I think it's just swollen up. I just think it's bruised. I just think it's injured a little bit. And, you know, I want you x-ray it. But unless you tell me I have to see the doctor, you need to understand I'm leaving. I am not going to pay to go see the doctor. They x-rayed. She came out. She looked at me and she said, I cannot tell you the results of the X-ray, but I will tell you, you are going to have to see the doctor today. Okay. All right. I walk in there. He looks at it and he says, that bone is broken. I said, what? I said, well, it's probably started healing already by now. It'll probably be healed in just a few days, won't it? He looked at me and I thought, oh, all right, if I have to wear a cast, I'll have to wear it maybe, 3 days or something. He laughed at me. I've never forgot it. He laughed at me and he said, maybe if you were 12 years old. And then he said this statement. I've never forgotten it. He said, at your age, it doesn't start healing for 11 days. I thought I was pretty young then. I sure don't want to break a bone now. I'm almost 18 years older. And you know what? I look back, it doesn't seem like any time, and some of you were here and remember, it doesn't seem like any time since I was hobbling around up here with that cast on my leg, and I was preaching and going like this, and I mean, I just wasn't going to stop just because I had a broken leg. Can I tell you why I'm pastor at Park Meadows Baptist Church tonight? Because on January 22nd, 1967, as a 15 and a half year old young man who had been rebellious toward God, toward his parents, I chose one night, sitting right about back there in the church where I was, right about in that area, right back there, I watched all my other friends go to the altar and I decided, it's time. And I chose to come and kneel at an altar and not play games with God. And I quit trying to run my own life and put it in God's hands and let Him run it. And I want to tell you something. In about 60 seconds, it took me a long time to get to that 60 seconds, but in about 60 seconds, I made the smartest decision a simple teenage boy ever made. And you know what I also realize? How glad I am my mom and dad always had me in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. Because if I had not been in church that Sunday night, the whole course of my whole life could have been changed for a different direction. Could I tell you another reason why I'm pastor here tonight? Because when the girl I was dating, crazy about liking, I was 15 and a half, 16 years of age, she wound up pregnant by somebody else. And I said, that's it. And she wrote me and she said, oh, but you don't understand. Please give me another chance. I didn't know not to date, but I knew not to date her anymore. I didn't know that dating itself was so destructive. I didn't understand that. Though I have scars on my life from dating and all that boyfriend, girlfriend stuff that I wish were not there, I did understand one thing. She definitely wasn't the one for me. And I still felt emotions for her. Thank God as time has gone by, those emotions long ago died. Could I tell you why I'm pastor at Park Meadows Baptist Church tonight? Because when it came time to look for a wife, I didn't go to the street corner hangout. I went to the church house. Because, here's a big one, I had been ignoring my mom and dad, disrespecting my mom and dad, being rebellious toward my mom and dad, dishonoring my mom and dad. And I made a different choice and I chose, I am going to honor my father and my mother. I'm going to listen to them. I'm going to obey them. The rebellion is going to leave. I'm here tonight because I went to college and graduate school where I was counseled to go. Much indecision among young people in our day concerning what they will do with their lives. And I wonder sometimes if it's that they don't have direction or that they just don't want to make right choices. Life is not made by the dreams you dream. It's made by the choice you make. Your choices matter because the brevity of life. There comes a time when you must choose. Notice that Moses made this choice. It talked about his parents first. Thank God for the influence of godly parents. There's no more powerful influence in the world. Amram and Jochebed were just a couple of slaves who laid bricks but feared God. And the Bible says they saw their son was a proper child. There was something about the way they looked down into Moses' little face, and it sparked faith and vision in their hearts. You know, it's hard for me to understand how daddy and mama cannot be in church for themselves. It really is. I don't get it. But I cannot begin to grasp how a dad or a mom can look down in the face of their little baby and stay away from the house of God. Dad and mom, when you look down in the face of that little one, be aware of some things. That child will probably go to heaven or hell based on what you do. Their life may well be a failure or a success based on what you do, the discipline you carry out, the training that you do or don't do, the example that you set, the diligence that you carry out in relation to making sure they stay on the right path. Don't try to put it off on somebody else. Nobody else can really take your place. It's going to be a sad day at the judgment with mothers standing with their daughters' blood on their hands. With fathers standing at the judgment before God with their sons' blood on their own hands. Read Ezekiel, you'll see what I'm talking about. I'm glad I had no choice about going to church as a boy. And I am so glad there are children here tonight who have chosen to come to church even though your parents didn't. And one of the reasons I'm preaching this is to say to you, you can continue to choose wisely if you will. What Amram and Jochebed did was important, but there came a time when Moses had to choose for himself. Oh, the wisdom that Moses showed here. He compared the riches of Egypt and the pleasures of sin, the position, the prestige, the power, the wealth, the freedom from difficulty to the reproach of Christ. And there's no comparison. Egypt wins hands down unless you look out in the future. He had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Moses could distinguish between those things that are passing and those things that are permanent. Why do people choose the world over Christ? They are short-sighted. Lot should have done what Moses did. Judas should have done what Moses did. It's not that hard. Look around you and find someone who once had to make the choice you're about to make, and then ask them how it came out. Just find somebody about to make the choice that made the choice you're about to make. Say, how did it come out anyway? Number four, your choices affect not only yourself. Not only you yourself, but affect others as well. The power of choice is an incredible power, not only because of the impact on your life, but because of the impact on other people's lives. Joshua, in the book of Joshua, as a father said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Too many fathers affect their families the wrong way by not choosing to serve God. And then they want to act like they haven't made any choice at all. I've had fathers say to me almost arrogantly, I'm not going to choose for my children, but they just did. They chose to say salvation doesn't matter. Serving God is a small thing. Sports and sleep may actually be more important than serving God. Did it affect me that T.G. and Francis Davis chose to get out of bed on Sunday morning and get six children ready to go to church, and they went to church faithfully and they chose to tithe and they chose to serve God? Yes. And your choices affect others as well. Butch O'Hare, headed back to his aircraft carrier, recognizing that a whole squadron of Japanese Zeros are on their way to destroy a whole fleet, and he thought he must somehow divert them from the fleet, laying aside all thoughts of personal safety. He dove into the formation of Japanese planes. Wing-mounted 50 calibers blazed as he charged in, attacking one surprised enemy plane after another. He wove in and out of the now broken formation and fired at as many planes as possible until finally all his ammunition was spent. And undaunted, he continued the assault using his plane itself. He dove at the Japanese Zeros, trying to at least clip off a wing or a tail in hopes of damaging as many enemy planes as possible and rendering them unfit to fly. He was desperate to do anything he could do to keep them from reaching the American ships. Finally, the exasperated Japanese squadron took off in another direction. Tremendously relieved, Butch O'Hare and his tattered fighter plane limped back to the carrier. And upon arrival, he reported in and related the events surrounding his return. And the film from the camera mounted on his plane told everybody he had told the truth. It showed the extent of his daring attempt to protect his fleet. He was recognized as a hero, given one of the nation's highest military honors. And to this day, everybody who calls the name of O'Hare Airport still recognizes and remembers and honors the courage of that great man. And though that sounds like the end of the story, it is still not the end of the story. Fifth, you may choose, but after you choose, you lose the ability to choose. You can make choices, but you cannot determine the outcome of those choices. The power of choice is not an absolute power. It is a limited power. You control the power of choice. You don't control what comes after it. You can choose, but you cannot choose what takes place as a result of your decision. Joshua said, "Choose you whom you will serve." Notice that, choose you whom you will serve. You choose, and then you become a servant of your own choices. You can choose what you read. You cannot choose how it's going to affect you. You can choose what you watch. You cannot choose how it's going to affect you. Choices are not fixed. Consequences are fixed. You can choose to reject Jesus Christ. The consequence of that decision is then out of your hands. You cannot go to heaven. You will wind up in hell. God will not save you against your will. Christian, you can choose to be rebellious toward God, but you cannot choose to stop the chastening hand of God. I can choose to go out here and get on Interstate 55 and head south. I cannot choose whether or not I will ride by Broadwell, Elkhart, and Williamsville. I will, if I get on Interstate 55 heading south, I will go by those places. God has not, get this, God has not predetermined your choices, but He has predetermined where they will lead you. You can choose to fellowship more with non-Christians than Christians. And you should be kind to everyone. I'm not saying be a snob. No Christian should be a snob. But you should choose your fellowship and your closest friendship with committed Christians if you're a committed Christian. You cannot choose the negative impact that the wrong decision in that area will make on you and your children. You can choose to break your dad and mom's heart. You cannot choose the feeling of emptiness that will result when your dad does not say, "You're a blessing to me. Thank God for the way you're living." I could have chosen to continue to break my dad and mom's heart. I could not have chosen, if I had continued that way, to have been able to hear my dad say to me, "Son, it is such a blessing to me how God is using you." There were two sons in the Taylor family in England. The older one set out to make a name for the family and turned his attention toward Parliament and prestige. But the younger son, Hudson Taylor, chose to give his life to Christ. So he turned his face toward China and obscurity. Hudson Taylor is the man who said, God uses men who are weak and feeble enough to lean on Him. Hudson Taylor is the man who said the Great Commission is not an option to be considered. It is a command to be obeyed. Hudson Taylor is known on every continent of this world 100 years later as the founder of the China Inland Mission. And his name was on the wall of the church where I was just at, where I just got those quotes from. They said years ago, if you looked in the encyclopedia to see the name of the other Taylor, the older brother, you would find these words: he is the brother of Hudson Taylor. Hear me? You cannot take the wrong road and it come out at the right place. If you take the wrong road, it will come out at the wrong place. I heard a youth pastor tell how a girl by the name of Stephanie sat in his office when she was 15 years of age. She looked across the desk at her youth pastor and she said, Brother Steve, I don't want to be an alcoholic, but I would like to get drunk just one time. I don't want to be addicted to smoking, but I'd sure like to try one cigarette. I don't want to be addicted to drugs, but I'd like to get high at least once. I don't want to be a harlot, but I'd like to spend one night with a boy in a motel who's not my husband. She was in a Christian home. She was going to bed at night with headphones on, listening to ungodly music. She started slipping out at night, and when I heard Brother Steve tell the story, he said, folks, she's not 15 now. It's 15 years later. She's 30 now. And guess what? She had her booze. She had her drugs. She had her immorality. And she's had her abortions. In fact, she's had it worse than she ever dreamed. One night she was at a tavern with her boyfriend, and both of them were drinking, and another man walked up and started flirting with her. And the boyfriend walked over to tell him to leave her alone. And she looked at her boyfriend and said, no, I think I want him tonight, not you. And the boyfriend went out to his pickup truck, got his pistol, walked back in, put the pistol to his temple and pulled the trigger in her presence and died in her arms. Since then, one night she was picked up by a sheriff's deputy. She had no clothes on. She was drunk, laying in the gutter. She spent the night in jail. And you know what? She made her choices, but she could not choose where her choices were going to lead her. Her choices then made her life a direction she didn't want it to go. Number six, no choice is itself a choice. William James said, when you have to make a choice and don't make it, that is in itself a choice. When you say, well, I'm just not going to choose, you just chose. You cannot say, I will not choose. You will choose. Number seven, the time for all choices eventually ends. Your life is a clock that is ticking. The choices you have today, you may not even have tomorrow. Young couples, you better be careful about saying you'll wait till you're financially secure to have children. You may choose too late. I talked to a man yesterday in Pennsylvania. He was telling me the story about his daughter's betrothal. It's a very interesting story, and he was sharing it with me, and he was thanking me for the messages on getting to the marriage altar. And I said, by the way, how many children do you have? And he said, just two. He said, I got a son, 26, and a daughter, 22. And And I didn't expect him to say what he said next. He said, I wish now my wife and I had had more children, but, you know, really it's too late now. Better be careful about saying that you will choose to serve God later on, because in Numbers chapter 14 at Kadesh Barnea, the children of Israel thought they would choose later. They're not going into the promised land. They rebelled against God. They rebelled against Moses and Aaron. And guess what? They didn't get another chance. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. Better be careful about saying that you will get saved later. What if the Spirit of God doesn't deal with you later? What if you don't see your need later? What if you die suddenly? A man told about the funeral procession of the great African missionary David Livingstone. They said it was one of the greatest funeral processions London ever saw. He said, in the great throng, a shabbily dressed bum fought his way through the crowd to see the funeral procession go by. And he was rebuked by the crowd. Don't push us, don't shove us. And he cried out, I have a right to see David Livingstone's body. I know him better than any of you. We were in Sunday school together. He decided for Christ. I decided against him. Could that fella have changed at that later time? Perhaps. But the time for choices that could produce great victories for God had ended. He could not do what David Livingstone had done. His life was already gone by. The time for all choices eventually ends. Moses lived 120 years, but he didn't have 120 years to make his choices. Too many people let the wrong people pressure them into making a wrong decision. Here's my points. Life is not made by the dreams you dream. It's made by the choices you make. Your choices matter because life is so short. There comes a time when you must choose. Your choices will affect not only yourself, but others. There are others around you right now being affected by your choices. You may choose. After you choose, you lose the ability to choose. Your choices will choose for you the consequences. No choice is not no choice. It is itself a choice. The time for all choices will end. Don't let the wrong pressure of others push you into a foolish choice. Moses listened to the Lord and listened to godly parents. But some people, they're with friends and they want to do what their friends want them to do. They're worried about what their friends might think about them. I remember the night I got right with God, one of the things I had to overcome was, what are my friends going to think about me if I surrender my life to God? I'm still glad I made the decision. A pastor sat in a third car back at a railroad crossing. There was one car up there, a second one, and a third one. There was a train going by. It was a double set of tracks. And the man in the second car, right in front of the pastor, kept creeping up closer and closer to the first car. Finally, it was all but touching the bumper of the car right there in front of the train. And the guy in the second car saw the caboose coming and started tapping on his horn. Beep, beep, beep. And the first car at the crossing, sensing the pressure from the second car, started moving forward, inching up. And the train went by, and the fellow in the second car laid on the horn. Beep! And the first car, feeling the pressure from the second car, shot across the tracks without looking in the opposite direction, to see if there was another train coming down the second set of tracks. There was a train. And that train plowed at full speed into the side of that car. And there was the crunch of steel and the squeal of metal on metal. And everybody in the car died, because they took the wrong pressure to make a foolish decision. I told you about Butch O'Hare. Some years earlier, this is the rest of the story. Some years earlier in Chicago, there was a fellow by the name of Easy Eddie. At that time, Al Capone virtually owned the city. Al Capone wasn't famous for anything heroic. His exploits were anything but praiseworthy. He was notorious for enmeshing the city of Chicago in everything from bootleg booze and prostitution to murder. Easy Eddie was Al Capone's lawyer, and for a good reason. He was good at what he did. In fact, his skill at legal maneuvering kept Big Al out of jail for a long time. And to show his appreciation for this crooked lawyer, Al Capone paid Easy Eddie very well. And not only was the money big, but the lawyer got special dividends. For instance, he and his family occupied a fenced-in mansion with live-in servants and all the conveniences of the day. And the estate was so large that it filled an entire Chicago city block. And Easy Eddie lived the high life of the Chicago mob and gave little consideration to anything else going on around him. He just kept his boss out of jail. But Easy Eddie had a soft spot. He had a little boy that he loved dearly. And Easy Eddie saw to it that his young son had the best of everything. Clothes, cars, a good education. Nothing was withheld. The price was no object. And despite his involvement with organized crime, Eddie even tried to teach his son right from wrong. And he tried to get his boy to rise above the sordid life he himself was involved in. He wanted his son to be a better man than he was. But with all his wealth and influence, there were two things that he couldn't give his son. Two things he sacrificed to the Al Capone mob, and that was a good name and a good example. One day, Easy Eddie got tired of it, and he made a difficult decision. He decided that to offer his son a good name was more important than all the riches that the Chicago mob and Al Capone could lavish on him. He decided he would rectify the wrong he had done. He would go to the authorities and tell the truth about Scarface Al Capone. He would try to clean up his tarnished name and offer his son some semblance of integrity. And to do that, he had to be willing to testify about what he knew about the mob. And he knew that the cost would be great. More than anything, he wanted to be an example to his son. He wanted to do his best to make restoration and hopefully have a good name to leave his son. And so he did. He stepped forward. He made the decision. He testified. And within 12 months, Easy Eddie's life ended in a blaze of gunfire and bloodshed on a lonely Chicago city street. He had given his son the greatest gift he had to offer, at the greatest price he could pay, his own life. I will leave my son the testimony of a father who was an honest man of integrity, who chose to do different than he had done before. And you're probably thinking, what do those two stories have to do with each other? Butch O'Hare was Easy Eddie's son. And what if Easy Eddie O'Hare had not chosen to change his path? What if he had not chosen, I will not go that way anymore, I will go another way? Not only might Butch O'Hare have never been a charactered American hero, but a fleet of ships and thousands of men may have died. And the choices you and I make impact our life and the lives of everybody around us for time and for eternity. Would you bow with me, please?